Accession number 11063, Reel 6.
Burn Reel 6.
After a good long while, we give it up. It was logic to give it up, because it was just taking his strength and logic. Well, then I decided I wanted to wee. Don't laugh at this, whoever listens to this, don't laugh at it. And there was only one time in my life I've chickened out on telling any about this. And believe it or not, it was a kidney specialist I once met. Anyway, I decided I wanted to wee. And there was a little brown enamel cup in the boat. And I looked at this cup and I thought, this was one of my better ideas. I thought, now if I put some ice in that cup and then wee on it, it'll melt the ice and I'll have a nice watered down drink. It'll be lovely and wet. I don't want to drink salt water, it'll drive me mad. And you can't tell you're drinking salt water, that I didn't know. Anyway, I made no more to do. I got some bits of ice in and broke them up. Fresh ice up at Battle, but what I hadn't figured was the Battle had been under salt water that many times, this boat had filled up and we'd emptied it, that it was tainted with salt. Anyway, I put this ice in the boat, and after a big effort getting all my clothes up, I weed in it and I shook it round. It melted a bit of the ice, but it was that damn cold, and I should have got the cup warm under my coat, but I didn't ever thought of that. I shook it round and I drank it. It looked like whiskey, but I can tell you this much, it did taste like whiskey, but it was wet. It was bitter and wet. But I found out afterwards it's worse than you can do, but I didn't know then. But I did it, I drank it. Anyway, we're back to bail and pray, bail and pray. I know it doesn't sound a long while, but we'd been bailing and praying for 3 days. And Robbie said, how far are we? I said, I don't know. The third mate, there were only me and Robbie, it were any good now. We were both tired. Anyway, we snuggled down again and another night went. And then we started up fourth day. I said, we'll do it in six, we'll do it in six. You're all right, we can last six. I was pig-headed and dogmatic. I said, we're British, we can last six. I said, we'll go at least a mile an hour. I said, 120 mile is 6 days. It's as simple as that, kid. Well, I'd got him as hyped up, I think, as I had. Anyway, fourth day weren't as rough as others. No, it was coming a bit better, what weather. And it was afternoon, and all of a sudden they said, hey, Titch. I said, what? He said, she ain't moving. She's hardly moving, look. And she's down at water. Well, before that, on the first day, the Belgium had said, we must get down to the plug. And I thought, I'd heard of these fellas that decided to pull plug out, and I've decided we're going to end it all. And it's a syndrome of boats, is that folks say, we're going to end it all, I've decided for us all. Anyway, when he said that we must I must get down to the plug, I picked the axe up and I thought, if you'll pull that plug out, mate, I'll split your nut in two. And I would have done that. What, first day? I'd forgotten that till now. I remember that I had the axe in my hand, and it loped round your hand, and if he'd have pulled the plug out, I'd have split his skull up, and there was no way he was deciding how we're going to die. Anyway, back to the fourth day, and I looked over the side and I said, good heavens, have you seen ice, Robert? Well, you know, when you look at a lifeboat, there's like loops of cord lying round the side. It's for people to hang on to. Well, with her going down at water, when she was full, you know, when you bailed her, she came up. With them catching into water, a movement of the boat through the water, ice had formed on them. Well, when you looked at all these lines, these curved lines, God, they made you bloody hungry. It was just the shape of a ham. You know when you see these lovely hams in shops, or just the shape of that. So I said, we've got to get them off, Robbie. Anyway, I said, I'll get the axe. So I got the axe. And but just before that, I was bailing, and for some reason or other, the rope slipped on my hands, and bucket went in water. It nearly drifted away. God, that was lucky. It was my fault and all. He grabbed it as it was passing him. I shouted, and he grabbed it. Without that bucket, we'd have been in a damn bad way. I don't know, because the other bailer was just a scoop with handle on, took about 3 cups at a time out. Anyway, that was a near-do. It was my fault. Anyway, I leant over the side. I said, look, you sit on my legs. So he sat on my thighs, and I leant over the side, and I'm chipping this ice off. Well, I started up bows, getting them off to get a nose up, and I'd got about halfway down one side. My legs ached with him sitting on and me leaning over the gunwale, and I kept coming in. And then all of a sudden, I was about three to go down, getting to quarter, and he said, don't do stern one stitch, do other, I'll do other side. I said, no, I'll do them. Anyway, all of a sudden, I don't know where this duck came from, but all the seabirds I saw up there, when we were at ice, there were some beautiful seabirds when we were right up at ice, all white, they were really lovely. Anyway, this duck or seabird or whatever it was, its wings were wet, and I never saw it come or where it was. All of a sudden, it started quacking, you know, quack, quack, round edge of boat. So I got this axe, and have you seen anybody try to, and I got a rope. Have you seen anybody try to lasso a duck? It don't work. And he said, what are you going to do? I said, I want to get this damn duck. I said, it can't get away. He said, why? I said, I'm going to pull that duck inboard, pull some feathers off its neck, chop its head off and drink its blood. He said, you bloody cannibal. I said, its blood will be warm, kid, and I'm going to drink it. And I had visions of me getting the duck, pulling its feathers off, chopping its head off, and blood pouring out, and me putting my head back and drinking it, and it'd be really lovely. I don't know what it'd have been like, but I didn't get the duck. But if I had a done, I would have done, no argument. I was so far, and there was no way I were dying. Anyway, I was still chipping away, and we had a couple of breaks to bail, and I'd said, no, I'll chip, you'll sit there. And all of a sudden they said, hey Titch, we saved. I said, you what? He said, I can see a mast. Well, what I didn't realise was that he was a lot higher up than me, and my head would be like boat. So I looked up and I thought, bloody hell, he's going. Well, he said, I can see another. And I thought, God, he's going. I can see another. I thought, he's definitely going. I said, let me get in. I thought, if he stands up now, I go in this water. And he's going crackers. And I still had axe in my hand. And I thought, God, if Robbie goes crackers, what do I do? Anyway, I couldn't see these damn, what is it? But he was 4 foot higher than me. He was not torched then. We saved, Titch, we saved. But just before that, he'd said, I can see land. And I said, you can't. Well, I'd got up and we could see land. We'd just sighted land. It were a damn long way off, but we just sighted land. And that renewed the chipping. Anyway, I looked. And then when I stood up, oh, I said, yes, there's three of them. Well, there were these three, like little matchstick masts coming towards us. And they come pretty fast. And I said, we saved, and we all, me and Robbie got, oh, don't want to give one another hug, and we said to the others, we saved. Anyway, they started coming, getting nearer, and Smith said, I said, there might be Russians or there might be Germans. And so Smith said, we shout comrade. Well, by that time, I was to got seat on the torch.
And you were what?
Stood on the torch, the seats. The seat that goes across the it's called the tort. I was stood on there, and I was waving, and Smith said, we'll shout comrade. Well, my mind were clear. I'm not the world's best thinker, but my mind were clear. And I said, you shout English. He said, I'll shout comrade. Well, by that time I moved at back of him, and I said, you'll shout English. Well, one of us said, I'm American. Well, he'd done buggered all it boat, so I said, you will shout English. I said, if you shout English and the Germans, they know you're not Russian. If you shout English and the Russian, they know you're not German shouting comrade. Comrade. I said, I don't want to be a comrade or a camarade. To a German, if somebody shouting comrade is a Russian, and to a Russian, somebody shouting comrade can be camarade. And either way, you can be shot. I said, you shout English, and if we get shot, but we won't get shot. Anyway, but then they were coming really fast to us, and they were like some motor patrol boats, and they spread out and came in from three angles, and they came to us, and they were pointing, and I was waving my hand saying, can't do it, can't do it. And I said, Smith said, I'll shout comrade. I said to him, I said, if you shout comrade, I'll kick the back of your head in, and that's why I'm stood here. I said, we're not coming 4 days and shouting anything wrong. I said, and that goes for anybody else. Anybody that shouts anything but English, I will kick the face of the head in. And Robinson looked at me, And they know I bloody meant it, because I did, and I would have done. If it had killed them, I'd have still done it. Anyway, Russian, these, what is it? And that, but then we could see it with a Russian flag. But the guns cocked, loaded, and pointing at us, they looked like about 0.5 machine guns, and they were all at action stations, and they were coming at 3 points, and I was frightened. I thought, God, all this way, and I'm going to get shot. Anyway, he shouted, and what is it? And we couldn't move. And he manoeuvred them alongside, and then all of a sudden there were two Ruskies at boat, and they shouted something to him, and they threw a rope down, and they, one forward and one aft, and they had us alongside, and then he pointed to me and he said, up, come up here, sort of style. Well, I put my hands up to get hold of, they were on a low freeboard, and I put my hands to pull up, but there wasn't enough pulling me to get up there. I thought all my coat's wet, I can't pull up, but answer to it was, there wasn't enough strength left. Anyway, two Ruskies pulled me on deck and held me by my arms, and they held me bloody firm. And he said, you. I said, English, you, Ruski, Russian. Yeah. Anyway, he said something to them, and they jumped down in the boat, and they threw some of the stuff out of the boat into the onto the deck, the chocolate. And I said, get some chocolate. There was some horrible dark chocolate. God, it made you thirsty. But that was it. But before that, an interesting thing. When Robbie sighted land, I said, oh, I'll try some water. And I just wanted to see if salt water, when you were really bad, tasted salt. And so I just dipped my cup over the side, because we'd only about 2 inches of freeboard then with that, when we'd found the ice. And I had a drink of it. And before I knew where I was, I'd had two cups. And I will tell you the truth, when you're in a bad way, it don't taste bloody salty. And I reckon you could drink a lot and go crackers with it. Anyway, Russians pulled everybody aboard, and he stayed down below, and I was going down below, you know, sign language, and he said, neat, 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 stood there. So he came up at the bridge, and he said, you, English. So I said, yes, and he got his pay book out. Well, I didn't have my pay book, but I showed him my identity disc. Well, he said he understood whether he did or not. And then through signs, he said, aeroplane, you know, aeroplane. Like, I said, neat, no, I didn't know neat then, no. I said, torpedo, so we were going, boom. And he wanted to know how long since, so I said 4 days. Ended up like Indians, 4 days, no sleep, you no moons, 4 days. Anyway, he said he understood, and they took boat in tow, and we were on his way. So at least we were safe. We'd done 4 days, it were four long days of moving, and I was bloody tired. Anyway, we went down below, there weren't much room, and there were, I don't know whether it were a woman or not, and they were trying to get some of them into bunks, and she, I got hold of Robbie and I hugged him. I said, we're safe, Mac, we're safe. Called him Malcolm. I said, we're safe, we've done it. He said, yes, we have, Titch. It was a right happy moment. Anyway, then they got some water, they let a decanter of water. God, did we drink that down. And then all of a sudden this fella come down and he got a bottle of vodka. And he said, yeah. So they poured this vodka out into a cup. It was a big vodka. And he signed, get it down. So I got it down. Good heavens, it went right down to my toes. I can always say that vodka's good for ingrown toenails. Anyway, we'd about three of them, me and Robbie, and then I sang for them. And you've never heard me sing, I'm a lousy singer. And she would try to get this, the young lad, and I started cutting his clothes off to get him off for either her or him. And all of a sudden they said, no, leave him. And so with that, we got on that bunk, and it was nice and warm, it was lovely. And it was nice and clean and all. And we went on, I think we dozed off, I'm not sure, they came and had a chat to us, but we didn't speak Russian, they didn't speak English. And then they met this other boat, well, I think it was a boat that we'd seen the day before, and strange as it may seem, the other lifeboat mustn't have been they say it wasn't a long way from us, but I think it was, because we were in that boat, seemed to be quite a bit before it rendezvoused with this other. And from what I've read about Roland's position, where he said he was picked up, I can't see it myself. He said he call her inlet, but I can't see that from how time we're in that boat, on that ship. Anyway, they said we were coming alongside this other ship and we were going to comrades. So I said to Robbie, I said, the real pig dog, I said, when you go on deck, you will stand, turn to the stern, and you will salute the ensign. Oh, he said, Titch, I'm in too bad a way for that. I said, look, they're Russian, they've saved us, we're English, you salute their flag, it's as simple as that. I said, you go up this ladder onto the deck, and if you do, I will. So we went up the ladder, and they, oh, they were good, they helped you up, they were like mothering you, you know, one at either side, shuffling you on. I could walk. And so we got on the deck, and I said, whoa, whoa, pushed them both away from me, and I stood up to attention and saluted their flag, and I said to him, now you will do the same. Anyway, he did do. Well, that did it. The Russians thought we were marvellous. The captain got out of us and gave us a big hug. The two fellas that were helping us gave us a big hug. The others that were watching gave us a big hug. The fellas that were on the other ship where they put the gangway across, they gave us a cheer. So with that, we walked across onto the other gangway, onto their quarter deck, and we did the same. And they gave us a right big hug. Anyway, they took us into this like a mess room affair. And who should be there? But we didn't know it. But the fellas out the other lifeboat. And the first one that I saw was Walter Baxter from Morecambe. Well, I was fresh. I had about three big vodkas and I was well away. And so I went bouncing in full of joy. My feet were sore. My feet were numb and my fingertips were numb, but I was all right. And I never realised that the others were in such a bad way. And he said, oh, Chitch, we've had a terrible journey. I said, well, I'm all right. I found afterwards that he lost half a foot. He never went back to sea. Anyway, they put me in a bunk, and then they brought somebody else in that were in a bad way. I'm not sure which of them it was. I think it was Morris, I'm not sure. And I said, I got out of the bunk, and I said, put him in the bunk. And so I slept on a form, and they brought me a cup of coffee, and they all come to chat, but I didn't speak Russian. And they asked me if I spoke German, and I said no. I'd have been a bit frightened of saying I spoke German, actually. But I didn't. Anyway, we went to dozed off to sleep. I don't remember seeing anybody else. They were all there, but I don't remember anybody, other particular names. And next morning, we tied up in Murmansk, and I remember coming down the gangway and getting into front of ambulance. I didn't get it back, and I remember an old dear with a broom, like a witch's broom, sweeping to keep it snow out at points as we were going up what is it, and we went out at docks. I never saw docks, really, out at docks and up this hill. We weren't long in ambulance up this hill to Murmansk. It was just like a cowboy town, what there were of it, and there were air raid going on then, and all the time I were in Murmansk it seemed to be one long air raid. And then we arrived at this building. I didn't know it was a school till years afterwards. I always thought it was a civic hall. And out of ambulance and into this here room. And when I got into this room, there were like boards up top of baths. And first thing I saw were a woman with like a spray, and she was, you know, washing somebody down. And then they said to us, I don't know whether we had a bath or a shower or what we had. I forgot now, so long since. Anyway, they give us some pyjamas and just drop your clothes there. Anyway, I dropped my clothes and they give us these pyjamas. Their pyjamas were rather laughable. They had a button at top, and you could do all you wanted at toilet without losing any other buttons. So every time you bent down, everything dropped out. And they took us up these stairs. I also remember the staircase and steps, and they showed us to a bed, and I got down. And there'd have been about three airheads while we'd been going through this, and somebody asked you for your name. I don't know that one now, I've forgotten. What is your name? And then I got into bed and bump. Oh, I said, it's lovely, but God, how your eyes hurt. Your eyes were, they were like, as if there were lumps in them. And that poor Yank, I also remember that poor Yank, when you looked at his eyes, I call him a Yank, him at what sat on top, he ended up that his hands were just drawn up like claws. And his face, where as he talked, he could only move his bottom jaw. It was just with ice. It was just like a vent. When you looked, when he talked, it was just like a ventriloquist dummy. I never spoke to him after that. After we got out of lifeboat, because I don't know what they did with him. And only time I'd spoke to him at lifeboat when I'd give him his cigs each day, three or four cigs a day. And when we sighted land, he said that. Is it land? I said, yes it is. He said, let's row to it. I said, you can't row. He said, turn ship and let me see it. So we turned boat and he could see it land, and he said, yes, you've got me there, kid. He said, give me an oar, put an oar in my hand, and I can rock my body backwards and forwards. I can't pull my hands, I can't move my arms. He said, but I can rock my body and that'll help. But others didn't want to try, and we did fancy rowing. We know it went up too far away, not a lot of good. But that pacified him, that he'd, at least he'd offered. He was only one of them that did. Anyway, as I was saying, I got in bed, looked at Robbie, turned over and went to sleep. And next thing I know, I woke up with some vomit, and I went, oh, I thought, good heavens, my mouth is full of salt. Oh, I'm wet. Well, the bandages feet up were like some cotton wool, some brown cotton wool, and some greaseproof paper and some loose bandages. And we'd gone into bed, and we were off to sleep. And I'd peat bed. Well, I hadn't peat bed, I'd saturated it. The pillow were wet and the bed were wet from top to bottom. So I got out, and some of others were laughing. I said, I've wet bed. And anyway, this big nurse come. I said, I've wet bed, I'm sorry. I said, I haven't done it since I was a baby. Oh, it is quite all right, the interpreter said. You are, I think she said, I was about 40, so many, most haven't. She just threw this mattress up top of another pile, put another mattress down, put a clean sheet on, and I went, they said, oh, the Americans died. I thought, oh, the poor soul, after all that. Anyway, I went off to sleep again, or bang out again. And I woke up and again, and they said, Anderson's just died, the cabin boy's just died. I thought, I'd better not go to sleep no more, because we don't know who else is going to die. Anyway, by that I was awake then, and I was all right, and they started feeding us. And then the British naval officer came round, and he asked us if we'd seen the sub. I said, yes. He said, what sub was it? I said, I don't know, nobody ever told me to look. And he showed us some pictures, but I couldn't have said which one. And then he wanted to know your name, and who you were and whatnot. And he said, are you Royal Navy? I said, yes. Well, he didn't seem to know what a naval gun on a merchant ship was. It was very nice. It was tip RN, Lieutenant RN. And with quite a chat, and he said, I don't know how long you'll be here, but it's dreadful here. And with that, we were safe, and we were in Murmansk. The bombing was very heavy. Very heavy. Sometimes they stop, put it that way. And I was there for about 12 or 13 days. But the Russians did what they could for us. They gave us what they had. They were a Russian guard on our food, because they used to put it on plates on a table in the alleyway. And there were two girls guarding it. They gave us better than they gave their own patients. It was rough. The bread was mahogany coloured. It scratched and it burnt when you went down. When it went down. And then second day we were there, they started, I don't know if I should put this in, if you don't like this you can always scrub it out. They started, I'd never been in hospital before, and I'd never seen, what is it, an enemas. Anyway, they came in with this here great big long white enamel tube, and this red thing, and this red rubber tube, and an enamel canister at the end, and they started turning them on the sides, and sticking this up the rump, and I could hear them groaning. And I thought, what's that? I didn't know what it was. And beds were in four rows, and they started at top of the other row, and I figured it out. I said, hey, they're giving everybody one of these. So Robbie said, yes. I said, come on, we're going to the toilet. You can't go to the toilet, you'll never do it, titular. I said, I will. Anyway, we both went down to the toilet. And there were some, no doors on, and there were some Russians there talking to two birds. And so we got down, and after a big effort, I said to Robbie said something. He said, well, I had piles. I said, it's either piles or that damn thing up your ass. So we managed it. And so I said, I've done it. He said, I haven't. We're going to flush it. I said, stop, don't let anybody flush it. I said, stop it there till I fetch some of this. So I went back up to ward, and I got one at nurses by the hand. I said, come here, I want to show you something. So we walked down with some slippers on his feet that were tied on with bandage round this padding they'd put on, because his feet were numb. And I took her down to the toilet. I said, me, that, him, that. Good, she said, good. Then we'd found out it good meant Dobra. So I can honestly say I think I'm the only fella that to give a fella across the aisle an enema, and I went to the toilet. But then I got a job then, what is it, Trouble War then. Half of them had their arms lapped up, and Chief stood when he next bed to me. Robbie were at this side of a little space, but his bed was pushed up to mine with Chief Stewart, and his legs were on cushions upwards, and you could actually see his kneecaps, and his legs and feet were like highly polished boots right up, and they were green with sprinkles of red in it. I didn't know at the time, but it was just gone rotten. It was evident, not to me at the time, but looking back it was evident that he would have to have them off, and they were both up to above his knees, just like your shoes, shiny like your shoes. Anyway, as I said, the raptor's arms was feet up, and on a morning they used to bring a big iron kettle in and a little dish, little washing, enamel washing up dish, and pour some water in a bowl for you to wash. Anyway, one day I said, no, I'll go wash. I only did it once, I didn't do it again. I went down to this toilet and I turned the tap on. Not a lot of water come out. I've never figured since how they got it to flow in Murmansk at winter, and I put my hands under. I didn't do it again. It was that cold that as soon as you put your hands under, hot flesh simply cling down your bones and go hard. Oof. That was the end of that. Next day she said, "You?" Oh, I said, "No, I'm getting washed here." And so they washed us each day there, and they used to feed us. Then one day doctor came in and she said, she examined me, and there were a couple of interpreters, but one of them were a bit older than others, and she wore a little bit of makeup. Oh, she were really nice, and she said that the doctor has examined you, and she gave her a name. She's an elderly lady. She carried a Colt 45. You could hear damn gun banging on bed irons, and she what doctor. Thought, good God, if she can't cure you, she'll shoot you. Anyway, she said that you'll have to be brave about this, but the doctor, Miss So-and-so, she said her name, I wouldn't know it now if you told me, she's one of the foremost experts on frostbite, and she says that the cold, that she's very sorry, but in her opinion, you will be sterile. You will never have no family. Anyway, she said I had to be brave and not worry, but I'd be sterile. Anyway, she was wrong, because when I got married, I did have a boy. Only one, but I did have a boy. And he ain't sterile, he's got two boys. Anyway, time went on, and these others, they brought some cigarettes in. I also remember them called paquetas. Paquetas, they're in a grey packet. And they were about two inches.